And you're listening to another episode of the Fans of Wrestling Show here on FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas back again for another week. How you guys doing? It's November. It's cold. Bring on winter wonderland.
Been raining most of the week here. But, you know, the copious amount of wrestling that is available to us at all times of the day, based on the 24/7 aspect of YouTube Daily Motion and the WWE Network and its many, many counterparts that are not affiliated, helps keep us warm in these cold times.
Oh my gosh, it is raining, but thankfully it will never rain on our love of wrestling. So much wrestling out there. Almost not enough time in our world, but somehow we managed to get it in so we can come back and talk about it with every one of you.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about it, because this is a bunch of stuff that I want to talk about. First, is something that we kind of didn't really get into as more information was made known about Brock Lesnar. You know, of course, he won the Universal Championship at Crown Jewel. And apparently this is more of a more long-term plan for Lesnar, as while we thought that this was going to be it for Lesnar, a one-time appearance at the big show in Saudi Arabia, and he was going to move on and get ready for a UFC fight once his suspension was lifted in January. Well, with the loss of Roman Reigns, Vince McMahon needed a big dog, and apparently no one on his full-time roster was big enough to take the place of Roman Reigns. So it sounds like Brock Lesnar maybe signed a brand new contract that may take him through the next WrestleMania in New York. So there is another, you know, well, for Brock it's long-term, right? But short-term plan for WWE. So Brock Lesnar may not be working every show. He's definitely working Survivor Series against AJ Styles. And he'll be working WrestleMania. The Rumble possibility. Of course, the contract includes the option for him to go out and fight once. But, you know, in a short time like this, when will he have time to fight? And, of course, with fighting, there's a risk of real injury and a concussion, which could prevent him from being able to participate in wrestling, which, you know, you don't want him fighting too close to WrestleMania. So, what do you guys make of here? WWE, Vince McMahon getting Lesnar on that desperation contract because they needed big shoes to fill with the loss of Reigns?
Well, I mean, I kind of feel bad for the rest of the roster that Vince McMahon doesn't have faith in any of them in particular to be the top guy, that they had to go to Brock, you know, as the other guy, as opposed to Braun Strowman, you know, giving him the championship or even advancing somebody else up the card. So yeah, I feel kind of bad for some of those guys who, you know, to think that boss doesn't see them as a top level guy right now. I mean, that has to hurt kind of the ego of some of these guys a little bit. And I mean, as much as fans on, you know, a lot of fans are very vocal about not liking Brock, especially not liking him as champion. You know, he's WWE still feels that he makes enough money for them that he's a strong enough return on their investment. So I, you know, if you don't have Roman, you go with Brock, you know. I mean, we had Roman still been healthy, it's very possible we could have got Brock Roman at WrestleMania for yet again, the third year in a row, or seventh year in a row. It definitely feels like a lot. I can't recall how many times it's been at Mania. I know we've seen it a lot. So yeah, I mean, you know, the Beast is here for probably at least another year, if not longer. I don't know. Maybe he. I would assume they probably don't want him fighting for the UFC or even training for a UFC fight between now and WrestleMania. that would be my guess, is they would want him to wait until after WrestleMania. Yeah, just because of the fear of, you know, not, I mean, heck, most UFC fighters get hurt in training, not the actual fights themselves. It's just very, they push themselves so hard. It's very, very strenuous. You know, that's where they get tendons and ligaments and separations and these kind of things damaged, that require surgery. That's where most of their injuries happen. And that would put, of course, Brock on the shelf for much longer than a concussion, where he may have to wait 30 or 60 days. You know, Brock back up top, obviously, which means limited use and, you know, of the Universal Championship on TV or the network.
And this was a surprise to who and why? I mean, let's put it like this. I didn't know Brock was gone enough to know that Brock was gone. Vince has a certain look or mindset when it comes to his top guys. They should look a certain way, like Brock Lesnar, especially on the flagship show. Brock brings enough, in Vince's eyes, mainstream media, especially with his UFC training ties, former champion, and legitimacy to his entertainment sport. So putting Lesnar back at the top of the card and not saying neglecting, but passing over other guys is not unusual. This is something that Vince has done in the past when Brock came back to the WWE. This is something that is Vince's MO and has been for years, because it's the big bodybuilder type that he loves as his champion. There, of course, have been certain exceptions to the rule, but Brock is the exception to all of those guys who are breaking their necks, hopefully not breaking their necks and tearing pecs, but just there week in and week out on the road doing these shows, because it has worked. It doesn't matter what the fans want. Vince does what he wants to do. The fans can get on all forms of social media. They can go to the moon. They can cry bloody murder and all of that. But the Universal title on Brock Lesnar not being on the show is fine, because they really believe their own hype that Brock Lesnar is an attraction. Brock Lesnar is a draw. Whenever he shows up at whatever show, Brock's name is enough to add to the seat and capacity of those arenas, the buy rate, or whatever we call the network subscriptions at this point in time. If he does Mania, if he does Survivor, well, when he does Survivor Series, whatever other shows he is scheduled for and is advertised for, WWE is banking on the fact that, like in the past, this is going to work out in their favor. It'll work out in Brock's favor as well, because he has the lightest schedule in the world for a champion or any superstar or wrestler of that matter of his supposed caliber. And he gets the biggest paychecks that most of us would kill to do, you know, his schedule and to get his money. So it's not unusual. And it is a formula that the WWE tried and worked. So if it's not broke, Vince will not fix it. He will continue onward and upwards. His focus now that he's fixed the champion problem will be XFL. That's where he's looking at now. Hell, we might see Brock at XFL, you know? You never know.
Well, it does suck for the talent that's there to be able to be given a shot. There's Lesnar. He does mean something to WWE. He brings some type of value. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. We don't know how long Roman Reigns is going to be gone, but it's going to be a while. If he ever comes back, let's hope he does. But yeah, I think this at least gives him the opportunity to take a look at other guys, give other guys a chance to be able to be that guy. This may require some shuffling around with the brands. You know, I mean, we haven't had, you know, exchange of talent in a while. So that could happen right before Mania, or could happen right after Mania. We can see something like that, or maybe they can bring some people from SmackDown, because let's keep it real. SmackDown has maybe slightly better talent as far as all these top names, that you're sort of missing something in the Raw brand. So with that, there's a lot of different opportunities. I'm very intrigued to see where the direction goes. Who really will be the top guy post Lesnar? Lesnar's, you know, going to only do this for so long. And without a Roman Reigns, who is there? How much faster do they move up guys from NXT to feed in the main roster? How many guys do you need to find the next Roman Reigns? And who do you guys see as the guy filling those shoes going forward?
Well, I mean, our prediction, you know, I think when we talked about the predictions for Crown Jewel, we, you know, I was pretty much certain that Braun Strowman would be getting the belt, but it was time for him to, especially because he'd be there on a regular basis, and they went the other way. So my guess was that, you know, I mean, like you said, Brock is going to be number one, obviously. He's the champion, but he's not going to be there every day. So he's going to be there every day, number one. You would think it'd be Braun Strowman, but why would you just put the belt on the guy if you're, so I'm not sure. They may kind of wait a couple months, you know, definitely get through Survivor Series, maybe through the rest of the year before they kind of decide what to do. They may bring in some extra people, shuffle the brands even before Mania, bring some extra people from NXT up. There's a lot of different possibilities, I guess, but I think it's you kind of get through the end of the year. You know, you get through Survivor Series, get through Tribute to the Troops, and move towards Royal Rumble, and start looking at, well, what do we need to do to help pad WrestleMania, and the things going outward. You know, I'm not really overly impressed with the top. I am impressed with the top tier in NXT. I just don't know how a lot of them are going to transition to the main roster. You know, you look at guys who've been at the top in NXT, and then they basically, they're used as kind of mid-card, kind of medium-level guys. You know, you look at a Bobby Roode, everybody says, man, Bobby Roode, you know, he did so well in NXT. He's going to make a bunch of money when he gets up to B. They're going to, you know, and they just... I mean, he's in kind of a goofy, he's in goofy tag team with Chad Gable. Not pushing him as a top level talent, not even pushing him as a singles level talent. So, you know, guys who are at the top of the peak, I don't think Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, EC3, Velveteen Dream, I don't see any of those kind of guys as jumping right up to the main roster and being given like a Finn Balor or an AJ Styles level push. Once they first come up, I don't see that happening with those guys. So I don't know who from NXT you would bring up that they would give that kind of top push to. You might have to do kind of a superstar shakeup thing, slide some guys from between Raw and SmackDown to make Raw a bit more interesting and create some new rivalries or renew some old rivalries in order to make set things up for WrestleMania this year?
That is a very tough question. I'm listening to what you're saying, Danny, and it is hard to imagine right now the way that the state of the WWE is for them to bring up or in some new talent to the main rosters. I think a superstar shakeup is in order after Survivor Series. I think you have to move some of your top tier talent from SmackDown to Raw to save the A show, to give it some more legitimacy. Not that it needs it, but just to make sure that cash cow is well fed. As good as Daniel Bryan is as a face, I think they need a full-time heel on Raw as one of your top people. And they're doing something weird now with The Miz where they're pushing him as a face. But we all know that Miz does his best work as a heel. I say Miz goes to Raw and perhaps saves Raw and does what he does best. You know, he gets people heated. He's consistent and solid in the ring. He's one of the top heels out there that's been there year after year after year and can do everything that they want their stars to do. And that might be a solution, a band-aid, so to speak, to temporarily tie things over until they bring up some of these guys who are mega talented from the NXT brand and get them into the main rosters and to build them how they want them to be built for the main roster runs that they potentially could have. You look at somebody like Ember Moon, who literally had to be reset down and repackaged and brought back up when they first brought her in. Went on SmackDown and it failed miserably. So now she's one of the women that they're talking about constantly nonstop in this women's evolution or whatever the hell they're calling it this week. So that might be the case where maybe they've learned from that mistake and could bring somebody into the fold on the main rosters and not make that same Moon mistake. I could see a EC3 just from his pedigree being someone they could bring up. He's been in their system before. That character, it's a slow burn, I think, down in NXT. But there are some people in the know who would recognize him from his TNA work, and they could build upon that and kind of, you know, make something work with it, maybe in a high mid-card level status until it builds enough recognition to push him into that main forefront. But again, I don't think that they're concerned overly with what's happening right now, that while the story has changed based on injuries and illness, I think their stories are so generically written that anybody could be plug and play. And that's the sadness of it all. Any one of their stars in the future or present could be pushed into a position that they've already written out. And it'll work. Yeah, maybe not the same as they hope, but it would still work.
Yeah, I think of the stars that are on NXT right now, Ricochet, Pete Dunne, Adam Cole. Then you have the guys like Matt Riddle and Cassius Ohno and Keith Lee. Guys that are very well known in the indies, but man, you're not sure how the main roster fans, the WWE only fans, are going to react to them. And then do you wonder, well, does Vince McMahon, he decides to go ahead and bring in the Elite. You know, does he finally say, okay, let's see what the flippy guys can do and bring in Omega and the Bucks, pay them to kind of make some magic like AJ Styles did a few years back. That may work. You know, Vince McMahon has big pockets, and those pockets are going to get even bigger, fuller of money once the new TV deals come in. And they need to look at those, right? They need to make sure that they are providing the content that both NBC Universal and Fox are going to want to continue to put on prime time on their TV. They're investing a lot of money in this, in these next deals, and for them to work out and make them an even longer relationship, yeah. They definitely can get whoever they want as long as they're willing to come and they're willing to pay the money. So we'll see. But yeah, there are stars. Again, people's reactions also depend on how they're pushed and how they're booked. And, you know, you see a Finn Balor who became the first ever Universal Champion. That was a little bit unexpected for some, but for others who know who Finn Balor was and where he came from, that's not necessarily a big surprise. So it's going to take literally taking these guys and turning them into their own guys. You know, you know Rollins, you know Ambrose, but nobody really cares of who they were before they came to WWE. So that's going to be very interesting. we'll find out, I guess. Next few months are going to be very interesting. I mean, they may take a quick pause for the cost over the holidays. And everything's going to be WrestleMania going forward. And then once WrestleMania comes and goes, they're able to hit the reset button and figure things out and get squared away for the rest of the year and get ready for the fall premieres. Let's go back to NXT for a little bit, though. Let's go ahead and kind of catch up with a few things. We haven't talked about them lately. So first, the biggest thing, finally, we found out who done it.
Yeah, who shot JR.
And it was none other than Johnny Wrestling himself. Johnny Gargano is the one that took out Aleister Black.
I was disappointed by that reveal. I felt that was a wasted opportunity to give somebody else a push.
So you take basically their biggest babyface
and decide to turn him kind of this heel bit for no reason.
Which was funny because when he finally came back and attacked Aleister Black from back a few weeks ago, the people didn't know what to make of it, but they were cheering for him to close the show. And then the announcers and everything the week after had to explain, oh, Johnny was the guy who injured Black. Why did he do it? And I mean, there's still going to be some people who are going to like Johnny Gargano and cheer for him.
Well, he cut that promo too that was like, you know, explaining all of his actions. And so sometimes when you have a heel explain something too much, you can rationalize with them and you can say, well, I can see that. Like, Aleister did kind of interject himself into the, you know, Ciampa Gargano feud or whatever. But yeah, I still feel it was a disappointing reveal. I feel that you could have taken somebody, you know, I mean, somebody new even, you know, you just mentioned a handful of people who are still very new to NXT, you know, and Riddle and Keith Lee, you know, or you actually do something with Cassius Ohno and put him into a program that people care about. I felt he would have been a great one. And yet again, you could have explained it the same storyline he's doing now, where he wants to be this gatekeeper because he's tired of getting passed over. That was perfect storyline reason for him to beat the crap out of Aleister Black, because he felt Black kind of passed him over. And people forgot about him, you know, because Aleister Black became the shiny new toy once he debuted. But yeah, I was disappointed by it. And, you know, the matches are going to be great. I mean, Aleister Black and Johnny Gargano at TakeOver War Games is going to be a fantastic match. But story-wise, I was sick of it before the reveal even happened, and then once the reveal happened, I was just more thankful it was the reveal had happened and the story was hopefully done, you know, versus, oh no, I'm excited and interested in why and all this. Like, I was just like, just move on to something else. Just let these guys fight and move on to something else.
Wow. I get it. There needs to be a big bad, and what better way to get the big bad out there is to have your most beloved turn into your most hated. It's interesting, only in the fact that, yes, they're going to have awesome and amazing matches. I just don't see it as Gargano's character, and they're working hard to make me believe bad Johnny, or Johnny be bad, I guess, all over again.
Oh, goodness.
I'm sorry.
He's coming back with the bad blaster at TakeOver War Games. He's going to shoot a bunch of dust and glitter and candy out for all the little children.
Exactly. So, while I'm not a fan of the whole thing, I love the mystery of it all. I really did. I think that it should have been...
It should have been like a 2-week thing, and that's it. But instead, they stretched it out over 2 months.
Well, it could have been longer. I mean,
it very well could have, but it didn't need to be as long as it was.
I think the no reveal is the best reveal. Everybody's suspect.
Well, I think it needed to be that long because of Aleister Black's injury, right? I mean, they had to wait for him to recover to put him back in the ring.
Okay. No, it is still unknown who attacked Hideo Itami in the Full Sail parking lot and injured him and put him on the shelf for much longer than that. That was in broad daylight. By the time he was down on the ground, he was still conscious, yet nobody was found. They didn't even seem to try to really care, you know, but then this whole Aleister Black, they decided to turn this into this long angle that dominates the show and gets Nikki Cross involved. It's like the one who knows the secret, but, you know, she's crazy, so do you believe her, you know, when she tries to tell you what she knows? Yeah.
Yeah. Can you really trust a crazy chick who likes to scream?
Yeah.
Hey. I'm sitting right here.
Yeah. Well.
Trust me.
But I thought that his explanation, his promo, saying, you know, I'm still a good guy. I'm like, okay, where do we want to go with this?
Well, the villain. Okay, the truest villain sees himself as the hero in his own story. Okay? The truest villain of any story feels that everything he's doing for the best and the right reasons, even though he's doing terrible and horrible things to other people. That's what, like, classic literature would tell you that, you know, storytelling elements. So it's, I mean, yet again, he feels he's justified. He feels he's still the good guy doing good things and fighting the good fight. It's classic villain type stuff. But yet again, I feel I'm also tired of WWE taking the pure baby faces and then making them dirty. Because to me, once you take, like, the good guy who fights the good fight and he does something bad, like, you can't go back to that purest good guy. You know, King Arthur's, you know, the perennial YB babyface. You're not going to have him turn and beat up Merlin for a while and then just, like, come back and be like, oh, yeah, Merlin, I was sorry about that. And him still have the same care, him still be the same pure knight he was. No, because you've done evil crap. Like, once your purity's broken, it's broken. You know, so that they did, that, you know, they've tried to do that with Bailey a little bit. They tried to do, you know, with a couple other people, you know, with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn was another big one who I'm still upset they kind of did this, you know, heelish turn thing with him. So it's just, yet again, there was just a whole lot about it. Was not happy, just not really interested in the story, but the matches will be good. You know, maybe they have one match and that's it. And then, or maybe they have multiple matches. I don't know.
So we'll see how it plays out. Like you said, at NXT TakeOver will be a good match. Side note, Nikki Cross, though, looks to be done with NXT. And moving on to the main roster, she made her debut against Becky Lynch on SmackDown Live. Looks to be back with Sanity, so the Insane are complete once again. That should be fun. I think Nikki Cross and the character will bring something different to SmackDown Live and the main roster. So finally getting her due. I think it'll be pretty cool. I think she'll do well. I thought that her match with Becky Lynch is pretty good. I like the move. I wish they had moved her originally. But, of course, I guess they needed her to serve a purpose. Now that she has fulfilled that purpose, she can be back with her family on the main roster.
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, they talked about, you know, they moved up kind of several women at one time from NXT. And so they wanted Nikki to be there as a more established character until they had a little more time to build up some of the other women who were there, build up Kyrie and Shayna, and you know, then now you have Io and Mia Yim, and, you know, build Lacey Evans up a little more. Like, they wanted Nikki there to help with some of those, and I guess she's done. I mean, it's possible she hops back and forth. You know, we've had people do that. It's also possible that it was just a one-off. It was the UK. You know, they wanted somebody from the UK to go there and fight Becky, who would get cheered against her. You know, the UK is, you know, is kind of a bizarro world sometimes when it comes to WWE. Things happen there that aren't necessarily canon of the story, and then they go back to the way things were once they come back stateside. I mean, I do like her personality as a member of the group Sanity, and she would definitely help be another good, interesting character, a veteran in the SmackDown's women's division. But yeah, I'm still just kind of waiting to see where they go with her, and of course what are they going to do with Sanity now that they're, you know, back on TV in a complete unit. They didn't really seem to do much with them there when, you know, their first kind of initially, and then they kind of hid them away for a bit, and I'm curious to see if they try to do anything with them.
I hope she goes back and forth. I hope they don't just pull her from NXT to the main roster just because she's such a good character. I think the more, the better. And it helps the ladies down at NXT. It helps build her mystique more. There are a lot of people who are upset that if she is on the main roster for good, that she did not get a women's title run in NXT, just because the woman is damn talented, just hands
down. Well, Becky Lynch didn't win the belt down in NXT either. Alexa Bliss didn't win the belt either.
Hey, listen, I'm just saying what the people are saying. Just repeating. Don't shoot the messenger. But I really love watching her work there and watching her work with a lot of these girls that are either coming into their own or just need that little extra something. So while she will shake up the SmackDown women's roster for sure, it'll be a different look for a lot of these girls because we've seen the same few hundred matches with the current roster of SmackDown women. I just don't want to see her leave totally from NXT. That's my own stingy purposes or what have you. I'd like to see her have a belt. I think former champion or future champion is definitely something that they should have, not have to her quickly, but at least get established for her. So her and Becky were dynamite. I'd love to see her and Becky go again and perhaps really, really kind of give them free reign. They did a great match, but I'd love to see more out of these two going head to head and kind of watching her and Asuka work again. That'll be awesome. So, I don't know. I'm excited, but I kind of want her on both shows. Double duty, because she got it in her.
You know, I think that they could do either way, but she, you know, once the main roster stay there, do great, she will. And now we look at NXT TakeOver. So far, they have 4 matches announced. We have Tommaso Ciampa defending the NXT Championship against Velveteen Dream, Aleister Black versus Johnny Gargano, Shayna Baszler versus Kairi Sane for the NXT Women's Championship in a 2 out of 3 falls match, and the Undisputed Era versus Pete Dunne, Ricochet, and the War Raiders in a War Games match. And this time, it's only 2 teams. It's more traditional, so I enjoy that part of it. What do you guys think? War Games is back, and the Undisputed Era again are in the middle of it.
Well, I mean, they've been the only faction, you know, that's been consistent there in NXT, you know, from, you know, the first War Games to now this War Games. Especially winning last year, they kind of came out. You know, they have something to prove with their match, etc. I think they did a good job of kind of building up the individual matches. You know, the different Rick and Dunn and the War Raiders. You know, now they've teamed together, but they're not like friends. They just have common enemy. you know, they've been building those up with them against the Undisputed Era for what feels like a couple months now. So a more natural build than just it's time for War Games, quick. We gotta in a couple weeks throw a couple teams together of people who don't like each other. I appreciate that aspect of it, the War Games match. Still don't care for Velveteen. Definitely don't want to see him in a title match. To me, the match I'm most hyped for is Baszler versus Kairi Sane, and that's, you know, based on the strength of their previous encounters. And so a 2 out of 3 falls match, you know, Shayna is going to have Marina and Jessamine there in her corner. So does Kairi come out alone, or does she come out with backup of her own this time, you know, in the form of Io Shirai and possibly Dakota Kai or, you know, somebody else there to kind of even the odds as well as the 2 out of 3 falls. So that's the match I'm really looking forward to. Black and Gargano will be a good match yet again because they're both really talented, but the story is just kind of strange. The how and the why are what's less interesting to me in that one.
WWE loves War Games. I mean, they've taken it and they act like it is their own concept and they're going to run with it. So
they own it. They bought WCW. War Games was included in that. They own it. It is their concept.
It is not their concept, but they act like they
what is it? Possession's 9/10 of the law? WWE possesses the War Games. They own it. It is theirs.
It's not the first time in history that something up north bought something down south and said they owned it. Anyway, they like the concept and they're running with it. And the Undisputed Era, I mean, they're good as a unit. So you put them out there, they perform well for them.
I think there was a more natural build as to why these teams don't like each other than in main roster years when TLC and Hell in a Cell comes. Like, it's, you know, you could say that the feud warranted this versus Hell in a Cell, where it's just, oh, you're fighting, you've been fighting for 3 months, time to do it in a cell, and then you'll fight for 2 more months after this, regardless.
It's NXT. They do it well. It's not something I'm looking forward to. Now watch, they just mess around and steal the show and become like my favorite thing. So we'll see. Everything so far is not bad. I just like the actual, you know, like you said, the 2 out of 3 falls. Looking forward to that because every time these ladies go at it, it's something different. It's something new. It's something that almost blows my mind that the fact that I've seen them so many times and it just, you know, something fresh and some fresh level of hell that Shayna brings and knowing how hard she worked to get there also makes me appreciative of the efforts of every time I see them. So excited, yeah. Just kind of waiting for them to lay out the rest of the card and see what we have.
Yeah, well, we usually get 5 matches, so there's one left. I got to think that maybe we get Ono versus one of the new guys.
Either hit Riddle and Keith Lee or maybe a triple threat or something, you think, maybe?
I think it'll be 1-on-1. But other than that, it could be just another tag match. Orkin and Birch versus the Forgotten Sons. You know, you also have Heavy Machinery who just returned, something like that. Not something to get a lot of time, but, you know, still a different focus on the tag teams. I don't know. It could be anything. Whatever it is, it'll be fun. But I'm sure that they'll announce it within the next week. But, yeah, that's NXT TakeOver. I'm definitely looking forward to it. It's always a really good show. 5 matches, 2.5 hours, and easy to watch. You know, you don't get lost, and you don't need a match to, you know, in between, like, semi-main events to cool you down. You just go bang, 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 and it's great. Love it. That'll be happening next Saturday in LA. Of course, Survivor Series is happening right after that. And where we're getting our traditional Raw versus SmackDown. And we're getting a lot of good matches. We get the rematch from last year now. AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar. Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch, we also get. Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Then we get the traditional 5-on-5 elimination matches for the men, for the women, for the tag teams. Also, Buddy Murphy versus Mustafa Ali for the Cruiserweight Championship. And the Authors of Pain versus The Bar. That is going to be a tough match right there. It's going to be a banger. As far as, like, you know, brutal.
Yeah, as far as just some guys going in there and just beating the tar out of each other, like.
Yeah, I want to try to see Cesaro swinging one of those two guys. He might end up swinging Maverick.
Drag Maverick instead, yeah. Swing Maverick into them.
That would be awesome to see.
Yeah, we'll definitely go into more details about this show next week, but right now, how's the show looking for you guys? I mean, we got a pretty nice takeover coming up, followed by Survivor Series. Then we get these matchups between these teams that, for the most part, have been separated, you know, different rosters.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, as it's being co-branded, so you're having the versus matches and the traditional Survivor Series matches, I think that tends to make it a little more interesting. I've always kind of liked the traditional Survivor Series matches. They're always kind of fun, and you get to see, you know, usually some people kind of stand out in those matches that don't normally get a chance to stand out in a high profile sense. So I'm actually kind of more intrigued by this pay-per-view than I have been by pay-per-views in the last several months. There's just kind of more little more things that, yet again, because they're co-branded, so we're getting matches that we don't normally see. The trash talking, as far as promos, as far as on Twitter, the social medias between Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey is pure and utter gold. It is outstanding. Becky Lynch as the man is
amazing.
Fantastic. It is one of wrestling's greatest things. And her back and forth with Ronda and Becky just going back and forth with anybody and everybody, whether they are attempting to say something to her or not, is the best stuff that WWE has done in social media in a long time. So it makes that match a lot more interesting and exciting than it would have been previously. And when you get to these champion versus champion matches, it kind of goes, you don't really know who's going to win. Of course, one person's not going to walk out with 2 belts, but at the same time, it could be potentially harmful to a champion to lose a high-profile match, because then now he has to go back to the rest of his or her roster and say, yes, I am the best here, but apparently I'm not the best everywhere. It puts people in different situations. So I'm definitely more intrigued and interested by this.
Becky Lynch is making this a must-see. I'm, like you said, loving everything that she's doing and saying, but she's making it interesting. Just Ronda's going to win. Rousey's not going to lose, unfortunately. But Becky is winning the verbal war, and I want to see just how these two mesh in the ring to see if Becky can help continue to bring good matches out of Ronda to make her a more believable and credible champion in the WWE. Becky's somebody who traditionally is not this firecracker, and here she is lighting it up on all forms of social media. Just even her swagger to the ring, the way she's walking different, is just amazing. She makes me want to see this pay-per-view just for that match. Traditional Survivor Series matches, I love those. I really do. Much like you, I just want to see who does what, who's the last person on their team, who's going to do something just kind of spectacular, who is going to make the other team just look like total crap if that happens. So Survivor Series wasn't always a big must-see on my 850 to-do list of WWE pay-per-views, since there are so many pay-per-views and specials that they put out now. But this one, man, I don't care where I am in the world, I'm definitely going to be tuning in to watch to see all that they're giving us, because this is exciting. I don't know if everybody else is just kind of low-key about this time of year because it's Thanksgiving or whatever, but I'm like, phew, Survivor Series, yo, let's do this. Let's go.
Yeah, I've always been big on the Survivor Series elimination matches. I remember growing up watching, the whole show was nothing but elimination matches, and those were really fun. And, you know, how the teams would have names, and they sort of made sense sometimes. They sort of just didn't, but still, it was cool to see that. So they've gotten away from that a little bit, but it's nice to see that they have them still, and they're still doing some of it. So yeah, I look forward to that. But we'll be talking more details about that next week once they have the full lineup. Now I just want to talk a little bit about New Japan Pro Wrestling. The road to Wrestle Kingdom continues, and the last stop, Power Struggle. So we just had that happen less than a week ago, and that basically helped us set up a lot of things for Wrestle Kingdom 13 happening January 4th in the Tokyo Dome. Not going to go through all the matches, but I do want to highlight a few that I thought were significant. More of that also when we talk a little about Wrestle Kingdom and take our first look at the card. All right, so first we get Bullet Club, Guerrillas of Destiny, and Robbie Eagles defeating Gray Bash Heel and Kushida. And the match was fun, but the biggest thing to me there was Bone Soldier. And as apparently, he was not as injured as we were led to believe. So Taiji Ishimori attacked Kushida with his crutches and to give Bullet Club the win. And that's going to set up their IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match at Wrestle Kingdom 13. Kushida versus Ishimori. So that, I thought, okay, that was something. Then we get Roppongi 3K defeating Los Ingobernables de Japón and Suzuki Gun. Apparently, that match was so good, we're going to rematch that at Wrestle Kingdom 13, this time for the titles. Goto wins the Never Openweight Championship for the fourth time in less than 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like he's been the center of that division. You know, he's traded the belt back and forth with a few people.
My favorite match of the night, by far, and this was a good one, with Tomohiro Ishii defeated Minoru Suzuki to retain the British Heavyweight Championship from Revolution Pro. But man, those two guys beat the crap out of each other.
Well, I mean, based on any of the interactions that we had seen in them in the different shows leading up to Power Struggle, you know, and some of the mixed tag matches when they would be in the ring against each other, you knew they were going to bring the heavy lumber. You know, I mean, both guys are known for that, but they did a good job of setting that up and, you know, giving you just enough to get you interested in those mixed tags to keep you interested to come back, you know, for basically let these guys, okay, now we're going to give them 20 minutes just to beat the tar out of each other. Definitely a match I wouldn't mind seeing again in the future. You know, Ishii and Suzuki are strong style through and through, and they definitely showed it to each other.
I think we saw a super strong style with those two. It was crazy. A couple times, just because I was like listening to them kind of go back and forth and just. I mean, you talk about bringing lumber, swinging for the fences, heavy hitters. You can use all the, you know, the words in the world, but the fact that it was magical as hell just kind of watching them go at it. And you could take all my yen. I'd watch that one again and again and again, and I'd love to see it live. But we'll see, you know, what happens down the road.
Yeah, and the thing, Minoru Suzuki, the man's 50 years old and he's still fighting this kind of style and he's still in great shape. I'm in awe. Yeah, but yeah, that's the whole thing. Anyways, love the match. Tsunito defeats Zack Sabre Jr. And in your main event, Chris Jericho defeats Evil to retain the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. And post-match, he continues to say, the rematch against Naito is never going to happen. The rematch against Naito is never going to happen. The rematch versus Naito is not happening. Well, the next night, in the press conference for Wrestle Kingdom 13, a few of the matches were officially made. And here we go. We get Suzuki-Gun defending the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Titles versus Roppongi Vice and Los Ingobernables de Japón. Kushida defending his Junior Heavyweight Championship against Taiji Ishimori. Okada versus Jay White in a singles match. This is a grudge match. As, you know, Jay White basically has made Okada's 2018 probably the worst ever. He's been a thorn in his side. He took his bestie away from him. He has broken his heart. Okada just celebrated her birthday, and as a birthday present, he gets this matchup. Chris Jericho will defend the Intercontinental Championship against Naito, even though he said many times he wouldn't. At the end of the day, he gets told, yes, you will. And officially, Kenny Omega defends the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Hiroshi Tanahashi. Wrestle Kingdom 13, January 4th, Tokyo Dome, biggest show of the year.
Marquee matches, Wrestle Kingdom always delivers. You know, they always deliver matches that feel like big matches and deliver. Wrestle Kingdom event, you know, the last 4 or 5 years has been a fantastic event. It's been long. But every, you know, sometimes it helps to break that show into a couple sittings. But it is, you know, the matches are fantastic. The stories leading up to it are very, very well done. You know, Okada Jay White for me is going to be a highlight. Also Kushida versus Ishimori. You know, we talked in the past weeks about Kushida being the ace of the junior division. And, you know, could possibly be looked at, you know, in 5-10 years as one of the greatest that division's ever seen. Just because of the caliber of stuff he's able to put out with the caliber of talent he's able to put out in tag matches and singles matches. You know, even this weekend he was teaming with Chris Sabin for Ring of Honor as, you know, their new incarnation of the Time Splitters. So to me, those are the big matches. Just because I'm big fans of the guys involved and know what they can do. But Omega and Tanahashi, of course, is going to be huge. I mean, and they've built, you know, Tanahashi won the G1, so that match has already been set as the main event for some time now. But it is, you know, I mean, this just with these five matches alone, you think we probably have at least another five matches to announce, you know, some more title matches to set up. They usually do the Legends Battle Royal as kind of part of the pre-show is always something that's kind of fun. But Wrestle Kingdom is a big thing. One of my not just wrestling bucket lists, but life bucket lists, also because January 4th happens to be my birthday. So my big thing would be to go to Japan and be there and get the whole experience and see Wrestle Kingdom live. So, you know, it's only been Wrestle Kingdom for a handful of years, but it's been the premier Tokyo Dome event for New Japan Wrestling for over 25 years. Every single year on January 4th. So hopefully within the next couple of years, I can finally make it out to Japan and have this wacky vacation in Japan, but make it coincidentally around Wrestle Kingdom and be there live.
Wacky Japanese Wrestling Vacation. That sounds like a movie title. I mean, listen, like there's only five matches announced so far. Like you said, this is huge. This January 4th show is huge now all over the world. So Omega and is going to do his thing with Tanahashi, but Chris Jericho, the ultimate, you know, showman, comes off a cruise, gonna, you know, hit January 4th up there and try to keep his title. I mean, what more of a showman could he possibly be? And a wrestler, because this is about wrestling. It's not the sports entertainment aspect, but Jericho, with his experience and his name, brings a lot to the table. People are already tuning in and finding folks who they love to watch them wrestle. And Jericho's name, for people who may be in the outskirts and the edges of wrestling, will now kind of tune in and see this huge, huge show and watch this action and be like, holy crap, this is great, which is what we want to happen. I'm looking for, I love Kushida. I really, really do. He's talented as hell. He's just everything, you know, that you want in a junior heavyweight. And he's held that championship, like you said, just on numerous, numerous occasions. But I love watching him in the ring. He is a true, true talent that I think a lot of people maybe on this side of the world maybe don't get him or just don't understand just how good he is. Because he's in a company who has other huge names who are also very, very good. So looking forward to seeing him. And just, I mean, Wrestle Kingdom in general. I may not watch it live like some people at 4 a.m. or whatever time it comes on here, but I will watch it and enjoy it, guaranteed.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. There's still a lot to still being questioned about what else the card's going to bring. Like Danny mentioned, the Rumble's always a fun opening for that. In the last couple of years, I believe that it was streamed for free on YouTube, so that's always a treat. You get to see a lot of names out there. Some things that are still stood out now, the big question is what's going to happen with Goto and the Never Open Weight Championship. Osprey kind of thinks that he deserves a shot. He wants a shot at it, but will it happen now with Goto, fellow member of Chaos, with the championship, or will Osprey wait? Then, of course, there's the World Tag League that's going to happen now from November to December, with the winner likely getting a shot at the Guerrillas of Destiny for the tag team championships, which that would basically put the Never Open Weight six-man tag titles on the shelf for this show, unless Bullet Club loses the title. So there's a lot of, you know, still questions to be answered as far as that is concerned, and what other type of matches. What do you do with your legends, right? You got guys like Nagata, Liger, and Kojima, and many others out there that you still don't have anything to do with. Of course, you know, sort of, you know, 3, 6, 10-man tags. I'm sure we'll see those as well. Just look forward to see it all that gets announced over the next few months as we get the final hype for Wrestle Kingdom 13 here done and ready. But a lot to look forward to. The holidays are soon to be coming. Thanksgiving hits us up first. We'll also be hitting a 200th episode coming up. So definitely a big deal for us to be able to be doing this for... No, well, technically we've done more than 200 episodes. But, you know, we've had other podcasts we've done. But, you know, the flagship here... 200 episodes, that's a big deal. We definitely are happy for everyone that is listening, and we want everybody to continue on listening to the Fans of Wrestling show. So be sure to go and subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere else where podcasts are played. Also check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F. In Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. This is it. This is our episode for this week. Thanks for listening. And as always, keep watching wrestling.